The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
It's always a pleasure whenever I get to speak to this particular gentleman. I want to say good afternoon to Officer Brent Batson. Good afternoon, Mr. Batson.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Murray, and all
listeners. I am good. It's always a pleasure. I mean, you are a very, very tough cookie to catch, you know. It's very, very difficult to get you sometimes. But I'm always happy when we are able to chat with you. And one of the things we're talking about this afternoon is the increase in pedestrians' death and a little talk on some clarity on the demerit points. Now, based on what we are seeing in the statistics, we have approximately 10 pedestrian deaths for the year. If those are wrong information I have, you can correct me. And that has happened in a six-week period with over 4,800 fixed penalty notices issued. I'm happy that you're here with me for at least 10, 15. So let's talk about this very quickly. What is happening on our nation roadways? It seems like this demerit point system is not getting our drivers to rehabilitate and do better driving.
Well, just a couple things we have to look at. One is the pedestrian death issues. We've had that splits between pedestrian deaths and roadways is between almost a 50% split on the main roads as well as on the highways. What is interesting is that most of the deaths of pedestrians on the highways have been persons of no fixed place of abode. Persons sometimes just crossing the highway. They have these unplanned developments sometimes that they cross into, and sadly, they tend to get killed actually pretty close to crossing infrastructure.
Okay.
Where they choose not to use the walkovers and stuff and take the chance to cross the highway. And we have to keep on reminding persons that, especially pedestrian risk, that once that speed limit was increased to 100 kilometers an hour, that speed is one which makes pedestrian impact unsurvivable. And so once you hit any pedestrian at a speed of 100 kilometers, you are guaranteed that person is going to receive fatal injuries. As compared to before at 80, so we tend to get pedestrians that would survive, but at 100, no way. It is unsurvivable. Mm-hmm. Worse yet with the heavier vehicles, if it's those Ford Rangers, those bigger pickups, they are heavier, they're higher. So the impacts to the upper body, the torso, also tends to be pretty strong with regards to the damage, the severity of the injury to the pedestrian. So it's an area of risk that is hard to manage because people say, well, why don't you charge the pedestrians? Well, the law doesn't allow us to do that. In some states, in the U.S., for example, there is a way that you can criminally go after persons that attempt to cross a highway over with legislation such as reckless endangerment and stuff like that. Because people forget that when pedestrians cross a highway without due regard to their safety or the safety of the drivers even, because we're very quick to blame the driver, Mr. Murray.
Well, that's the point. I'm happy that you mentioned it because I was now coming to you on that. We tend to blame a driver that's coming at 100 km. Now, I wanted to ask you, if a driver is driving at 100 kilometers per hour, he's within the speed limit, and as you just rightfully mentioned, at that speed impact, it's more likely than not it will be fatal. And somebody runs across the road, especially down by the Beetham Gardens on the Beetham Highway, where persons just run across. They're trying to time a vehicle. If a driver collides with someone like that, and you all can prove that his speed was well within the speed limit, what happens thereafter?
Well, in most cases, again, this is assuming the collision scene has already been processed. I could just tell you recently, what I've seen is a lot of the investigators have coded highway pedestrian deaths as pedestrians crossing heedless to traffic. So in the sense that the pedestrian is coded wrong.
Okay.
Unfortunately, but a death has occurred though. But that itself, and this is the point where I'm saying this has to be addressed as well. The trauma, I mean, picture this, Mr. Murray. Like you said, you're driving down, you're going up to the airport. on your head, 100 kilometers, Churchill Roosevelt Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, you're going to pick up a friend in the airport. And this is based on something that happened. And this guy, for some reason, runs across the highway.
Yeah.
You didn't have time to react. By the time you hit your brake,
yeah,
impact is imminent. And then he comes through the windscreen.
Yeah.
The trauma to you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to touch that car again. You don't want to drive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then again, the police still have to investigate. You have that hanging over you. Where you're wondering now, are you going to be charged or not? So there's a lot of trauma attached to that incident. So we're really hoping we get some sort of tools to try and manage that risk. But it's very difficult.
You know, having you explain it so comprehensively, I can imagine it will be difficult. I am very pleased, though, to note that you all are really taking a very, very, very clear-cut approach in terms of not just one-time blame a driver for reckless driving or driving drunk. Once a driver is not inebriated and has proven that he passes breathalyzer and you can prove, I mean, come on. Some of our pedestrians, they cross the road as though they're in the bedroom. They cross lackadaisical. In other words, I remember driving recently. I am driving a panel van, a L300. I'm coming down the road. And the pedestrian is crossing and I blow the horn. And this is the woman and her child to me. Well, bunksmen, So I wondered if she could go and take welding. You know, the mechanic could weld back on her arm, her leg, mend the bones. Because I don't understand the behavior. Well, bunksmen, so in other words, and you're not even at a pedestrian crossing, there's no zebra crossing. You crossing and chancing in the middle of the road. You're not at...
I want to say, so I hear you on that, and I just want to separate two things. One, if we migrate, however, and if you look at one of the articles we put out, where pedestrians have been killed on the main roads, for example, you would have seen that lawyer that was killed.
Yes, the lawyer.
You know?
Yeah.
And in some of these roadways, the pedestrians are sharing the road with the drivers. And
that's unfortunate.
And again, that's where our concern is with speed. Remember, 50 kilometers on main roads is survivable for pedestrians once people obey that speed limit. And drivers tend to forget it's not them alone. You have cyclists, you have pedestrians, and all of this forms part of road traffic. So what does this mean? And I want to jump back to what you said for a driver. If you're driving along the Eastern Main Road and the speed limit is 50 kilometers an hour, and like you said, you're driving the maximum permitted speed of 50 kilometers. However, you are doing it on a roadway where schools are present. It is 2:30 when school is out, and you don't, multiple taxis and stuff are going to be stopping, and people are lighting from vehicles, and kids may be crossing. To drive the maximum speed at those traffic conditions is unreasonable.
Yeah, it's not a reasonable decision.
So persons have to, you can't just come and say, well, I was driving 50 kilometers. No. Your job as a driver is to assess your speed based on the pre-existing conditions at the time. And from what is seen from a holistic standpoint, that speed that you chose of driving in max with all these things happening is too fast.
You know, could we look at a law where if you are in a school zone, I was in Miami recently and I was driving, and while I was heading to a meeting, I was following the speed limit. However, I noticed on the Google Maps when I was going that I was going through one of the boulevards that was a school zone.
Right.
Where I found everyone slowed down and was driving almost a crawl. So I'm like, what is happening? I am upset to get to this meeting. I left the hotel a little late. What's going on? We are at the speed limit. And it's only then I was reminded, listen, you're in a school zone. So I am thinking that maybe we are such follow fashions. We want to do the U-turn system. When I did some investigations on it, I realized we were trying to measure with international standards. Can we look at a part of the law where we can amend the traffic laws for school zones, because you are right. If I am coming down the Eastern Main Road and we have numerous schools on the East-West Corridor on the Eastern Main Road, you have Takarigua Primary School, you have about three primary schools right in the same zone. So what I'm thinking, if I'm coming down the main road, yes, traffic might be at a crawl because everybody's stopping to pick up their children. But if I get a little clear thoroughfare and I decide to go up to 50, I am well within my rights. But as you say, I did not use reasonable judgment. Yeah. But what about if we're in a school zone during school hours? Because on a Sunday, public holidays, or when school is out, that law does not apply on Miami roads. But during a school time, where school is in, when you get there, you have no choice. Failing to do so will have some severe consequences.
Usually those consequences are linked to what you mentioned before. For example, breaches of school zones usually carry double demerit points.
That's great. Yeah, it does. Now, as you mentioned demerit, recently somebody touched base with me and they were making some inquiries because they know I talk with you frequently from time to time on these issues in order to edify the public. And what was mentioned to me, now we're coming back to the road fatalities and the deaths, so we're coming back to that. But I just want to clear a little issue here. What was said to me is that this individual raked in 30 points. So they gave me the information this afternoon, because I did mention I was going to be speaking with you live on the show and they need to be listening. And they gave me the information, the driver's permit number, date of birth. Those are the two things that you need, really, to go on the U-turn portal. When I pull up the information, truth and in fact, the person does have 30 points to their name. But guess what? When I go on another one of the pages, because the first page come up, tells you the entire driving credentials of the person, class 3, the name, this, that, blah, 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 status, active. When I hit for demerit points and citations or whatever, sanctions rather, I saw 30 demerit points on the person's name. So I said, maybe there's a glitch. I went and pulled up my name, my information. I saw 0 because I don't have any demerit points. So I went back and checked the person. I've seen 30. Now, how is this possible? Now, I questioned. They say maybe they receive correspondence. So I said to them, I said, you know, police officers do not. There is a handful, but the majority, the masses, the mass of the police service who are trained individuals with the ticketing system, they do not have access to know how much points you have. They see an infraction, they stop you, they have two choices: either they give you a warning or they ticket you for the infraction. And if they choose to ticket you, they're not seeing your ticketing history, they are not seeing your demerit points. If a warning was issued to you for a particular incident on your vehicle, they can see the warning. And they could say, well, you get a warning for this last week about the same bulb. Or the same tire. So they could see the warning, but they cannot see the history. And he asked me, so why is that? I said, well, in speaking with Brent, I was told, you know, it curtails corruption. A police officer can't come and say, well, you know, they're your last ticket, you know, what you going to do for me? He said, but if that is the case, and he brought this point to me, if that's the case, then is it that we cannot trust police officers? And if we can't trust them, who we could trust? So if you're telling me that they can't see it.
Right, but you're going down. The police officers, one aspect is anti-corruption, right?
Right.
The other aspect is what they call biased decision-making.
Okay.
And that biased decision-making can also go into the realm of preventing malice. Well, why I say that? Corruption, that's just one area. But also, let's just say you encounter a person and you gave me some chats, not so? And you're roughing up.
Right, and I gave you some chat.
Right, and then when I check now, I see you on, let me just say, 70 demerit points.
Yeah, I'll get a ticket.
So I hunt in, you understand? I hunt in for a violation. Because you see that attitude you give me, I got to find something fair. That's another aspect. And then that's a biasness from the information that I have.
Well said, well said.
So it's not, the corruption is one part, the other part is the human part. And sometimes, as you would know, we get genuine idiots on the road who test your patience to the max.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you mention that and the points, because it's your timing is impeccable. We just came off a licensing exercise on the Audrey Jeffers Highway.
The foreshore, yeah.
Yeah,
I know about that. Right?
So I want all your listeners to please understand this. There is something called due process, which must be followed.
Mm-hmm.
As you correctly said, if they got their first notice for disqualification to be triggered, these notices are served. There's some people, as I mentioned before, have been dodging the service. And that's why they are able to rack up 30 points and they still have their permits.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're still getting more points. And by getting more points, what's happening, they're moving their disqualification periods, as you know, from 6 months to 1 year to 2 years, because they continuously accumulate.
Right.
While they're attempting to dodge.
Mm-hmm.
But you see the difference with the system? The rope has an end, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
The rope will have an end. At some point, you will have to reinteract with the licensing system. At some point, for example, you try to dodge the service of the letter. What happened today? We saved, together with licensing, saved 17 disqualification notices to drivers just in our roadblock. Some of them got both one time.
What is
so what does that mean? They now have 14 days to surrender their driver's permit. Or else, if they're caught without it, or if they're caught with it even, they'll be charged with not only driving while disqualified, but failing to surrender the permit as well.
So hear this. So you said some of them were served with both. So some drivers was actually served with suspension letters that after 14 days to bring it in. Right, so that's one. What when you say they were served, some of them were served with booth, what was the booth they were served with today? What happened?
Right, so what happened is that you had the first notice was the that notifying you
of
that
intent,
you have, that you have reached your disqualification, accumulation of points,
mm-hmm.
and as you correctly said, the transfer commissioner intends to disqualify you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Good, and then there are those that received it, but they're saying that they're saying they never got it. So you got both one time so that you could get the second one. So they were actually able to issue both to the drivers to see, like, you didn't get the first copy. So just in case, here's your first, and now you get your second.
Ah.
Which is, like I said, you are now disqualified from driving. You will be disqualified, and you have 14 days to surrender.
Now, hear me good. So they get the second. So on Audrey Jeffers Highway, I saw it, where there was a huge exercise, right? So the license officers give you your first one,
mm-hmm.
with intent to suspend you, and then they hit you the suspension one time.
One time.
So you get the first one, but you can't, you have time no more, because that would have been sent to you by a TT post. We couldn't get you.
That's right.
So here's what, take it now, and then one mm-hmm. time, the time passed, so you're getting the two.
Because the time already passed, that's right.
Good. So here's what. Let's say the person receives the first one,
mm-hmm.
where they have 14 days to write you, to write and say why, but mm-hmm. they don't write.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
They chose not to write.
Right, they choose not to write, they choose mm-hmm. not to say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What happens thereafter?
Well, again, so once the 14 days pass from the date of the letter, and it's not the date you receive it, you know.
Mm.
Is the date
it was sent
of the transfer commissioner's letter.
Yeah.
So once 14 days pass from that date, then, and you have not given any notice and so forth in your letter, the second one is sent out, which is
intent to suspend, and you have 14 days.
No, informing you that you have been
suspended.
You are to be disqualified, and you have 14 days to surrender.
So I didn't get a letter, and I never bring him a permit.
Right, so now you're in what I would like to call limbo, because you're saying it was saved to the same area that you received the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're saying you never received the second one, but no one signed for it, or you're dodging it, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So therefore, it can't be triggered until there's some confirmation of receipt.
Right. So
and
this
persons now are trying to use that, but if all you're doing is buying time for the inevitable, and worse is to get more tickets during the disqualification period. You remember, you cannot, and then the persons who continue to drive during the disqualified time, past the 6 months. So let me just say the dodgy sequence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when they went to renew their permit or do some transaction, mm-hmm. any license and things, no, saying you're disqualified. You actually have no permit. You failed to surrender, and licensing is going to save you a summon for that. Because you're still in possession. You don't own that driver's permit, you know.
I told them that.
I want to be clear on that.
You do not own it.
That's the state's document.
Yeah. And if they ask for it?
The registration plate on your vehicle is the state's own.
Mm-hmm.
The only vehicle. And they have, and the transport commissioner, when he amended the Road Traffic Act, gave him the power to take this back.
Mm-hmm. If necessary.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is, you're delaying the inevitable, right? So if they never catch you, your permit bound to expire at some point. And you would need to renew. And if you are caught driving with an expired permit, that's a different category of problems you're facing there.
Well, expired is to us a more a risk of revenue, in the sense that you fail to pay, you know, but it's a separate charge. You're correct.
So if somebody is caught driving with an expired permit or driver, mm-hmm. well, we have license, an expired driver's license. What's the charge?
Right. Well, it's driver with expired permit. But that's a summary charge.
Right.
It's not arrest without warrant.
Right. Is that an arrestable offense?
No.
So are you allowed to still drive? Would the police allow?
No.
All right. So you got to park up that car. Get somebody else to drive. And you but you will get a ticket or what? What you will get? A summary to come to court. What you're going to get?
Correct. Warning of intended prosecution, and then a summons would be served.
So you're going to get warnings of intended prosecution, mm-hmm. and perhaps a summons could be served to you, or would be served to you, and then you have to attend court. And
yes.
usually, based on your experience, you reach to the court, what happens there?
Well, these are strict liability offenses. So, I mean, I'm trying to understand how you think you're going to defend this, because it's either your permit is valid or is expired.
Well, right. So you reach the court, because mm-hmm. that's what I'm saying. It's not a ticketable offense. So mm-hmm. once the police stop you and your permit has expired 3 months, 6 months,
mm-hmm.
5 months, 4 months ago, and you didn't go and renew it, you may tell the police, I didn't remember, I didn't notice. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. I have driven on an expired insurance for a month, and it's only when I got stopped in a routine check, I recognized my permit, my insurance had expired. I know the time was coming, but I didn't pay attention in my busy schedule. And I was given an opportunity to go and pay for it.
Wow, you're lucky.
I was very fortunate. I was given an opportunity to go. I had to leave the vehicle parked up at the side of the road. I said, I will go up a Rima and I will get it. I went and I paid and I come back. They were still there performing the exercises. I think they was concluded, but the two officers stayed back to make sure that this vehicle don't move.
Yeah.
Because a little bit again is a record and station and it's money to pay. So they gave mm-hmm. me an opportunity because people can genuinely forget. They can. Even though you are sent notices by the insurance companies, the time is coming, they can. Even with your permit, you can forget. It can slip you. Can.
It's true. But again, the officers at that point exercised some discretion with you.
They did. Mm-hmm. I have to say that they did. Right? He said, well, we are due to give you two tickets. One, because you're driving without an insurance, which is a danger to the road, right? So this vehicle is so and so. I can't remember what was the other ticket. No, I didn't think there was. I think there was one, driving without insurance. But he said, listen, I said, oh, gosh, boy, I really forgot. And he said,
and that's what makes it different.
He said,
humility, though, is what makes the difference.
I said,
it
boss,
makes a big difference to the stop.
I really did not. I couldn't remember if I was sending notice. I would imagine it probably came in the mail, but in my busy schedule to get the kids to school, but it slipped me. But yeah. I will go, but. And I said, well, I can go now. I can leave it here and I can run up a Rima. I could travel up and I can go and get it and come back. He said, well, all right, if you could get it in half an hour, we're here. It took me a little more than half hour, but I came back and they were there and they saw it and they're all right. Don't make it happen again. Go ahead. And I went my way. The thing about it is this. This person I am seeing, because they gave me all the credentials and I checked it, 30 demerit points and they're active. You are saying nothing can be done legally. So the licensing commission, transport commissioner, Mr. Clive Clark, cannot go on the
disqualify him
until
that notice is served.
Okay.
So what they're doing right now, from what the last information I had,
mm-hmm.
there are plans to do publications in the papers as form of service. So you could say what you want. Once it appears in the papers, the court, well, from a legal perspective, is considered safe.
I think that is that and all. I would be. I think people should kick up against that. I don't see that as a fail safe, because I'll tell you why. We have gone electronic. It's about a lot of persons don't buy our newspapers anymore.
Mm-hmm,
right,
mm-hmm.
So putting that in the papers, putting that ad in the papers, I mean, we know this. People go up online, and then if you go up online and you have a subscription, you wouldn't see ads. You will more or less get stories. If you pull up the Guardian, the Express, any one of the dailies, you will get, and you go up on Google and you pull it up, you go to news, you will get the stories, but you wouldn't get mm-hmm. the ads on these things unless you subscribe to the paper. So I'm thinking sure. that. I mean, I know you are part of the committee, and I am not seeing that as a fail-safe where that can serve as a person would have seen it or knew about it. I do not see how. I think that can be fought within the court system and won, because oh gosh, we live in an era where even with us right here at Guardian Media, if you do not subscribe to Guardian, you would be able to Google www.guardiannewspaper.com and you'll see the Guardian, you'll get news, but you wouldn't get mm-hmm. the ads on the different content. So I'm saying that yeah. is not a fit. That to me, that that's yeah. out the door. That's just my opinion, sir.
Yeah,
you can take it back.
And like I said, that mean I hear your opinion, but as you know, in regards to the context of the law and service, for example, as you know, from everything from certain things must be published in the papers for the court to recognize it as considered saved or published. Also in the Ministry of Works website, the Facebook pages and so forth.
Yeah.
Those documents would be there. I just wanted to mention to everyone a couple of things that came out of that road traffic stop.
Yes.
And for your listeners, please, to the opportunity to ensure and transmit to you guys, right? A lot of persons, drivers got tickets again for their passengers not wearing a seatbelt.
Mm.
Please remember, Section 43C was amended to make the driver
liable,
explicitly liable. All right, so make sure your front seat passenger is buckled in before you drive off.
So let me ask you this, for the benefit of those that have ignorant passengers with them. If I pick up someone, a friend, a colleague, boy, and they don't know, well, I could get a ticket, and they refuse to put on their seatbelt, what can one do in that instance?
Well, you could take the approach that I take, which is simply this. The vehicle is, it's real simple, the vehicle is not moving until the buckle that's built, you know.
Okay.
Well, I could stay here, hold it, because I'm not collecting that 1,000 tickets and 4 points for you.
Uh-huh. So the passenger, if the passenger is not wearing a seatbelt, that is a ticketable offense by $1,000 and 4 points.
To the driver.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that drivers understand that responsibility, that burden has shifted to them.
So, Mr. Batson, if you are driving, Officer Batson, if somebody, let's say you're on the roadway, you might be doing a walking patrol and whatever, a foot patrol, I say in walking, and a driver pulls up to you, skirks, officer, listen, I have this person in my car, they don't want to put on the seat, but I just want to get your attention to have them to come out my car, please. Could that be done?
Well, what I'm going to do is assist the driver to let the passenger know we as law enforcement will not permit the journey to continue until they listen to the driver, either exit the vehicle or put on the seatbelt.
Okay. All right.
And it's sad because today there was a fatal road traffic accident involving a young man. I think he was 20 years old.
Wow.
On the, I don't know if you saw the picture of the car wrap around the pole by Grand Bazaar.
Yeah.
On the southbound
lane, yes.
So the young man died, but the injuries he received, it was a clear indication of wearing a seatbelt.
Mm.
I mean, there was blood pouring out of his ears.
Wow.
All right, that's how severe the injuries are. And this is why the police, who are in charge of public safety,
mm-hmm.
have a zero tolerance for no seatbelt wearing. Because it's your first form of protection in event of a crash, and yet we have to beg people to wear it.
All right, I hear that, and I hope my listeners are taking note. I know people are trying to call me. I'll permit one call because I know Brent is a very busy officer. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, David, thanks a lot for the info. Besides, I have two things quickly first. Not even Superman could stop a fatal accident when someone run across the highway, collide with your vehicle, bonk your vehicle, using bonkers. The key bonk your vehicle there. They put him in the mortuary now. I want to know why the state don't take some blood some, because they can't do a better ELISA with the pedestrian, he did. So take some blood from this pedestrian to help the driver to start him in court. And the other thing is, why don't the state pay the driver when someone runs across the road and bounce them, kill them, mash up your windscreen, mash up your bumper, mash up your fender? This cannot be right to the driver. The state is supposed to pay the driver. Somebody has to pay. The family, somebody has to pay that driver for the damage of this vehicle. Thanks a lot, sir.
No, I'm not a police officer, but I think Officer Batson would have cleared up that issue in the beginning of our discussion here this afternoon when he talked about that they have started looking at the possibilities of pedestrian error, meaning the pedestrian are the ones that are at fault. So if it is deduced that the pedestrian is at fault, there is no need to take a blood sample for alcohol content in the blood. One.
No.
And two.
Well, that's a standard operating procedure. Let's let everybody know.
Okay.
Once there's a death, there's a toxicology.
So you see? So there's a toxicology. Once there's a death, all right? They will check to see if there was alcohol. So that's one. So that, and then the police is taking that approach. The government is taking the approach with the police officers because they have to follow what the legislation says and they are investigating thoroughly. Gone are the days when bongs behind wrong. Remember a long time you bongs a man from behind and you automatically wrong? No, the person in front could have caused you to get to hit them, to rear-end them. So that's a different thing as well. So the part with the government paying you for your vehicle, I don't know how Brent would want to respond to that, but in my respective opinion, I think that's no, that is an insurance issue.
Yeah, I hear you on that. As you know, the challenge is two things. One, you have to remember in most cases, the pedestrian, unless they survive, and you could go after them civilly. This is a lose-lose situation.
It is.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Where's the third party? You have to fix your own vehicle anyway.
Yep.
Okay, so I hear with regards to what the cry of the driver, but that's going to be a scenario that a Cassidy state gets involved in at any time.
And I like what you said, it's a lose-lose. Person lost their life, and you lose financially, you had to repair your vehicle, and the trauma that it was caused to you, like you mentioned that story with heading up to the airport, that person, it is what it is. And at the end of the day, as Brent rightfully said, it's a lose-lose. Life is lost. Finances will be lost because you had to repair your vehicle or get a new one depending on the damages. All these things, might come into play.
Yeah.
So,
and just before you go, Dave, I just want to, again, coming out to the exercise, drivers and business owners, pay attention to the MGW of the vehicle and the class of the driver's permit. Three company vehicles where the driver was supposed to have class 4 driver's permits and they did not have it. And when I asked the driver, I said, sir, are you aware what the MGW is of this vehicle that you're driving? He was clueless. So again, it really is the business owner's responsibility to ensure that the driver
that you're hiring qualified
and employing because it invalidates the insurance at that point. Once you do not have that class for that commercial vehicle, it invalidates the insurance.
So here's another question I want to ask you. Person has a vehicle, and what I discovered, what was put before me, is that the certified copy and that which is on the chassis number on the vehicle is one thing, but the certified copy has a digit or a letter off. How this was discovered? They went to inspect the vehicle. Couldn't get the vehicle inspected because it's not on the system. Because this was written. This was the written one. So they say you had to go and get the new certified copy. Now, and it's a panel van. It's one of those company vehicles. So you cannot take it to a regular dealer to inspect. It has to go to license office. And license office is only going to deal with the registered owner of the vehicle to clear up these clerical errors. So here's my problem now. The person cannot find the registered owner. It's been years and the person migrated or whatever. They're not around. They cannot get in touch with the person. What happens then?
Right. So I know that licensing has a team that deals with that. I would recommend a person email the Transport Commissioner's office or write to them, explaining to them what the situation is. because I know that there has been a situation where licensing officers have visited, even compelled persons to finish off complete transfers, you know. Sometimes they just might need a notarized letter from a justice of the peace or a lawyer or something indicating that the vehicle has been sold XYZ. So there are ways they can work within the law.
So there are ways.
But they have to be careful because, remember, larceny is also a crime.
No,
you ain't want the person to come and say,
but that's my point. Eh? If you are found guilty of larceny at that point, then you look for your bacchanal. But I'm simply saying, if the registered owner cannot be found, right? They're not deceased, but they're out of the country. They migrate, they sell you, and them go on the way, right? You didn't get a chance to transfer. You try family members. They say, boy, them out of the country. They never come back. So. Mm-hmm. You are left with the vehicle now. You don't pay for it. You have it. Now, you cannot inspect it because you don't have... So, I'm asking. So, you're saying at that juncture, they should write...
They need to.
Or come in...
Remember, mm-hmm. they need to identify who's the person who they bought it from. And again, it goes back to... And it's the country's fault in the sense that all of us were very lackadaisical with this vehicle transfer.
Yeah, we will. We sell it and we go on with it.
Yeah, and now the chickens come home to roost because of digitization.
Mm-hmm.
And enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So it is one of the gaps, and it's something that through the new system has inherited, and it'll take time to resolve. But that doesn't mean that he should not discount some sort of communication with the transport commissioner to try and assist.
All right, so now you see the transport commissioner. You're saying assist there, boy, and that's a language that is telling me that I go help you. But I needed something concrete that I can go to this department, have this cleared up so that it can be addressed. Because if you stop me on the road, you want to give me 9 points and you want to hit my ticket. But I legally cannot find the person.
I hear you.
Go ahead.
It's almost as if you're blaming everybody else for not complying with the law to begin with, correct? You're a big man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so your situation requires assistance. And remember, if I'm the transfer commissioner and you write to him, he now sends it to his appropriate department head to contact the person and say, okay, give us the details on who you bought it from, yada, 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 some contact details and so forth to start a process.
Okay.
And just with some legal correspondence that comes back, hopefully you'll meet somebody in a road check without your inspection that you could say, hey, I'm trying to fix this. This is where I wrote to the transport commissioner. I told him my situation to try and alleviate strict enforcement.
Interesting. Fair enough. I like that. So you could shoot it. Everybody have phones and everybody have emails. So you send an email to the transport commissioner requesting information and help on this matter. And if you are stopped in a roadblock, you can show where you send the email and you are waiting response on this.
And you're attempting.
You're attempting to get this rectified and you have not gotten it as yet because you did email the transport office and you are waiting. So, they can see that and know, okay, this is happening. All right, you have to move on. They can't do anything at that juncture because at the end of the day, it is really not your fault. It's not that you was lackadaisical in dealing with the matter. I'm happy that you cleared that up because that was a concern for someone that I know very dear. And when they heard that you was on the show today, they asked me to ask those questions. So I had to ask, and I'm happy that you're listening. I'm now getting some thumbs up on my WhatsApp here because they're listening. And that's good. You know, I'm very, very happy that you took a few minutes. Don't mind, we went about 45 minutes, but...
No problem.
It's always good. You know, I would never turn down an interview or having you on the program because the information is so valid. Now, what's the price now? I know the move from $2,500. What's the price now to go and do this rehabilitation course? I think it's $1,350. Is that correct?
Last time I heard, that's there. Even Arrive Alive and stuff.
Arrive Alive and the logistics training center and stuff. Yeah. So it's like $1,350. You know, and my final question to you, Officer Batson, is what you said the most ticketed offense that I had this afternoon or during the course of the day when you had the exercise was this passenger seat belt and persons driving vehicles that doesn't carry, they're not qualified to drive.
Yes. That wasn't ticketed though. And they had to bring, imagine, so there were persons who were on their way to job sites and the vehicle had to remain there until they brought a driver with the correct class of permit
to move it.
Ticketed for the insurance.
But it ticketed them for the insurance.
Yeah, you drove once you didn't have the class of that day.
You know,
that
I like vehicle class. This system is so dreaded, boy. It harsh, boy. Because I mean, if the person innocent and they don't know, and they bring in somebody to move it, you're still ticketing them, boy. Oh God, so that ticket.
I hear you. that's licensing discretion at that point, but again, this is the importance of programs like yours, so we can use it as outreach
to edify.
Yeah.
Officer Batson, sure. Thank you right. So much for chatting with me. Please, when I call you, try and answer my call. I know you didn't see my call in here, Brent.
I try when I can.
I know you're very, very busy, and I want to tell you thank you so much. I'm very happy that you was active on that exercise this afternoon, that you can give first-hand information and not something that would have been reported to you by the other officers, but you were there, so you saw for yourself. Thank you so much, and you are always welcome on my program at any given time. Thank you very much,
all
officer.
Right.
Same to you, buddy.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.